Hello there and welcome. Today is Thursday, February 7th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Glad you could join us. Coming up a day after the president warns lawmakers about investigating him, House Democrats announce a widening probe.
It's called presidential harassment, and it's unfortunate, and it really does hurt our country.
Women in Congress make a big statement at Tuesday night's State of the Union. Children impacted by tragic fires in California are healing with music. Also ahead, a new report claims North Korea is working to ensure its nuclear and ballistic missiles won't be destroyed. It's all on today's International Edition. In his second State of the Union address Tuesday night, U.S. President Donald Trump laid out an agenda that included calls of bipartisan cooperation and unity. But he also slammed what he called ridiculous partisan investigations and stood firm on his demand for a wall along the country's southern border. White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara reports.
Madam Speaker, the President of the United States.
President Trump broke with tradition and began his State of the Union speech without waiting to be introduced by the Democratic Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, with whom he clashed with in recent weeks.
We must reject the politics of revenge, resistance, and retribution.
As is the norm, Trump gave a long list of achievements.
There's nothing anywhere in the world that can compete with America.
But immigration soon came to the forefront, an issue Trump is fighting with Democrats who continue to deny his demand for $5.7 billion border wall funding.
In the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built.
The wall feud partially closed the government for 35 days. If no deal is reached by February 15th, another government shutdown looms.
He didn't give the Democrats anything that they wanted to hear. He didn't make any offerings. He didn't propose any compromises. I don't think he moved anyone any closer towards a solution for keeping the government open.
Female lawmakers of the Democratic Party wore white to mark the suffragette movement that led to women's right to vote. Most of them did not clap during the speech, except when Trump extended an olive branch and noted that a century after suffragette, a record number of women are serving in Congress. On foreign policy, Trump expressed support for regime change in Venezuela and touted what he considered his successes, including the trade war with China, the U.S. withdrawal from a nuclear treaty with Russia, the reduction of tensions with North Korea, and the continuing pressure on Iran. Trump outlined elements of a bipartisan agenda, such as boosting infrastructure, giving paid family leave, lowering the cost of health care, eradicating HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, and childhood cancer. But he also pushed for issues important to his political base, including legislation prohibiting late-term abortions, and slammed the investigation into possible collusion between his presidential campaign and Russia during the 2016 election.
If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation.
Stacey Abrams, who narrowly lost a bid in November to be Georgia's governor, delivered the Democratic response, highlighting access to voting rights.
We must reject the cynicism that says allowing every eligible vote to be cast and counted is a power grab.
From marriage equality, health care, to confronting racism, Abrams laid out her party's agenda.
I think it sent a message that this is the Democratic Party of today. A woman of color, a woman who comes not from the politician class.
Another notable moment, possibly the first in a State of the Union address, lawmakers breaking out in song. For one of the president's guests, Pittsburgh Synagogue Massacre survivor Judah Samet on his 81st birthday. Patsy Wittakuswara, VOA News.
Well, Democratic women lawmakers from the House of Representatives, many of them dressed in white to celebrate 100 years of women having the right to vote, projected a picture of calm displeasure during the president's State of the Union speech that made clear his version of unity was not one they could accept. As President Trump lauded the growing number of women finding jobs in the economy, the women lawmakers rose and cheered and high-fived each other for apparently filling many of the open jobs in Congress. A record number of women were elected in the November midterms. Joining us to talk about all of this is Jennifer Lawless, Commonwealth Professor of Politics at the University of Virginia. Thanks so much for being with us, Jen. The women in Congress really made a statement Tuesday night.
So there are a couple of important dynamics. The first is that 2018 was a year of the woman in that we elected a record number of women. We went from about 21% women in Congress to a little more than 23%. So again, men remain overwhelmingly dominant in our political institutions, but there was some progress. The reason I think last night was so important and so optically important is because we've also reached a point now where about 80% of the women serving are on the Democratic side of the aisle. So it's not that you've got women in brightly colored suits spattered among the audience. Mm-hmm. They're almost all on one side of the aisle. They were sitting together. They were wearing white, and they made a very clear statement that they're in Washington and they're going to hold Trump accountable. So visually it was important, and the fact that the ratio is more lopsided now than it's ever been when it comes to the parties means that we see them as a more cohesive group than we ever have before as well.
And Trump seemed to be taken aback a bit by the reaction when they started cheering at one point and stood up and high-fived, and it was quite a moment.
It really was. I mean, he was making the point about how he's generated more jobs for women than anybody else, and we've seen that in recent months. And obviously, they were sort of poking fun at that, suggesting that, yes, his mere presence also sent a record number of female Democrats to Congress, and they stood up and took credit for that. I do think it was a pretty human moment, not only for all of them, but even for Donald Trump. He was taken aback, but I think in the broad scheme of things, he handled it quite well and seemed genuinely okay with the fact that they were taking the spotlight away from him, if even only for 20 seconds.
There are already a record number of Democratic women that have declared they will run for president in 2020, and it looks like there may even be more in the very near future. Does this make a statement that we're beyond caring whether it's a man or a woman running the highest office in the land? What do you think is contributing to the fact that we have so many women this time, more than ever before, running?
A couple of things have led to an increase in the number of female presidential candidates. The first is Hillary Clinton. She did break that glass ceiling. She garnered her party's nomination, and she won the popular vote, which sends a clear signal that Americans are willing to vote for a woman for president. Now, she didn't win, and there is a lot of scholarly commentary. There's a lot of public commentary speculating as to why. Some people would argue that it has to do with the Electoral College and the way the system is set up. Others would argue that sexism was injected into the process. But there's no question that what she achieved sent a signal that we were more ready to elect a woman than we had ever been before. The second factor is that it takes a candidate to run for president. And until recently, we just haven't had that many women in the Senate who are ready and willing to step forward. Now we have women who have been serving for a decent amount of time. And so as we see more and more women get elected to Congress, more and more women elected to state legislatures, and then they climb that career ladder, we're just going to have more women who have the requisite qualifications and backgrounds that we tend to see in presidential candidates. So I think this is the beginning of a pattern.
Do you think that at this point a woman could be elected president?
I do. I think it depends on who the woman is, and I think it depends on the manner in which the campaign unfolds. But I don't think there's anything to suggest that voters are not ready to elect a woman. We saw in 2018 that female candidates actually fared better than male candidates on the Democratic side of the aisle. We saw in 2016 that even though she was the most disliked Democratic candidate we've ever had, Hillary Clinton garnered more votes than anybody except Barack Obama, including Donald Trump. And we've also seen survey after survey report that at the end of the day, it really comes down to partisanship, not the sex of the candidate. So this is not to say that the sex of the candidate and the ability of a candidate to be viable and take on Donald Trump won't matter in the Democratic primary. People are going to be considering that. But I don't know that voters are willing to right now write off any female candidate.
All right. That's Jennifer Lawless. She's a Commonwealth Professor of Politics at the University of Virginia. President Trump is lashing out at Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff after Schiff, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee Wednesday, announced it would widen investigations to go beyond Russia and examine whether Trump's concern for his financial interests are driving his policy decisions and other actions as president. Wednesday, Trump told reporters specifically went after Schiff.
He's just a political hack who's trying to build a name for himself. It's called presidential harassment, and it's unfortunate, and it really does hurt our country.
Well, in a statement, the California congressman and former federal prosecutor said the committee would continue examining Russia's actions during the 2016 presidential election, as well as contacts between Russia and Trump's campaign team, but now would also scrutinize whether any foreign actor has sought to compromise or holds leverage, financial or otherwise, over Donald Trump, his family, his business, or associates. Schiff said it is the Congress's responsibility.
Our investigation to make sure that the country is protected.
President Trump says there's no basis for a powerful legislative committee to investigate his finances. During Tuesday night's State of the Union, the president called investigations on him purely partisan and warned that it would derail economic progress.
If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, joining us to discuss is Robert Deitz, professor of governmental affairs at George Mason University. Let us start with the president's comments about the investigations at the State of the Union. How unusual was something like that during an address like that?
In the years that I have followed political issues like this, it's unprecedented. There's just no point in making an enemy. And bear in mind, there is effectively no check on congressional inquiries from a legal standpoint, except really one, and I'm not sure how powerful it is in this context, and that is executive privilege. But the Supreme Court has held in a number of different contexts that Congress may investigate anything it wants that's even arguably attached to its legislative needs.
Right.
And so there's simply no way that Trump or his lawyers can race into federal court and say, please enjoin Congress, this committee, from asking me questions involving X. That will not happen. And therefore, there's enormous, I think, an enormous pressure on the president in this context about his financial dealings. And I think there are kind of two sorts. One is the financial dealings with Russian oligarchs. But there's another one. You know, people have asked for years, why doesn't Mr. Trump release his income tax returns? And he's come up with one excuse after another for not doing so. Congress can get those tax returns and make them public. And I think that is a huge threat for Mr. Trump, in part because of his vanity about how much he's worth.
What about the claim by the president that, you know, basically no business can get done if these investigations are happening? Is that...
Well, that's another kind of threat. I mean, if he says to the American people, I'm really upset because I'll be fighting with Congress, the American people might well say, hey, not my problem. But he throws in another qualifier that the American people might be concerned about. If he says, we're not going to get any work done on behalf of the American people if these investigations continue. Now, I found that a very weak threat. But I think that's what he was about.
And, of course, 24 hours later, actually less than 24 hours later, House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff announces that there is a broad investigation of his committee, which will go beyond Russia or the Saudis or basically anyone else.
Right.
To see if any foreign actor has sought to compromise or hold leverage, financial or otherwise, over the president, his family, his businesses, or even his associates. Coincidence that it was the day after?
No, not at all. I think it was planned. It's almost sort of a junior version of Ms. Pelosi in her confrontation with the president. The president makes a threat on national television last night, and the very next day, Adam Schiff says, you think I'm intimidated? Take this.
What do you think the ramifications could be for the president with all these investigations? And do you think the reason he's trying so hard to prevent them is because there's something there?
Of course there's something there. nobody fights this hard in order to be proven how honest and straightforward and transparent he's conducted himself.
What are the ramifications of
well,
what...
Well, for one thing, there could be serious money laundering at issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm speculating, and I just want to make it clear to your audience that I'm speculating.
Right.
But if you ask the question, what is at stake, that is a possibility. There's also possibilities of quid pro quos. Remember, it's been reported, and I don't think denied, that Mr. Trump was offering the top floor of his new building to President Putin. Plus, it may turn out that his income tax returns have, you know, sort of dicey deductions or questionable things in them. And so those are all potential threats.
That's Robert Deitz, professor of governmental affairs at George Mason University. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Turkey's leader is slamming Washington over its dealing with Venezuela. High-level China-U.S. trade talks will resume next week. The clock is ticking on efforts to strike a U.S. border deal. And scientists devise a new earthquake warning. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The United Kingdom is due under British and European law to leave the EU in just 53 days, yet British Prime Minister Theresa May wants last-minute changes to a divorce deal agreed with the EU last November to win over lawmakers in the British Parliament. May is seeking legally binding changes to the deal to replace the Northern Irish backstop, an insurance policy that aims to prevent the reintroduction of a hard border between EU member Ireland and the British province of Northern Ireland. But as Britain's crisis over EU membership is approaching its finale with an array of options, including no-deal Brexit, a last-minute deal, a snap election, or a delay, European Council President Donald Tusk is losing patience, and he's not holding back on his frustrations over the impasse.
By the way, I've been wondering what that special place in hell looks like for those who promoted Brexit without even a sketch of a plan how to carry it safely.
Well, joining us now to discuss is Paris-based journalist, British journalist, Catherine Field. Obviously, the European Union is not happy about Brexit in the first place, much less the fact that they can't seem to get it together with all of this. Is that what you're seeing? He's just sort of reached his limit?
Absolutely. There's a real feeling now that any chance of a last-minute deal or a seamless exit from the European Union by the United Kingdom, there's a sense now that that's all gone, that this is all now just heading towards a fiasco. And in fact, that was the rest of Donald Tusk's remarks, that he said that really he'd abandon all hope of there being an orderly exit, and he's now trying to avert a fiasco when the UK leaves. So these were really very strong words, and it just goes to show now that there is certainly very little room for compromise and possibly very little place for any goodwill between the European Union and the United Kingdom.
Are they actually concerned that other nations could follow in the path of Brexit, or has that sort of calmed down given the debacle that has been going on with trying to even reach any kind of deal here?
That's exactly it. There was a fear that there would be some sort of contagion, that other members would join in. Particularly, there was talk about it in Italy, and even at one stage, the far right in France were talking about it. It was a word that came up all the time, Frexit. You also had Grexit when it was the talks about Greece leaving several years ago. So everyone's seen this. They've seen how difficult it is to extract themselves or to extract a country, an economy, from the European Union. But they've also had a chance to see just how much and how far the European Union, both the Commission, which is the executive, and the Council, which is in charge of the political decisions, just how far they will go to protect countries within the European Union bloc. And that's what we're seeing particularly with Ireland. Ireland is a very small member of the European Union. It's right out on its western edge, but the European Union is defending it, and it's defending it against a much larger, a bigger economy and a more stronger diplomatic presence in the United Kingdom. So this has really shown other countries Well, you know, don't go down that road. It will affect your economy, and it will also affect your standing in the world. And it won't be easy, and they're not going to make it easy.
Where do things go from here? I know Prime Minister Theresa May is due to be in Brussels later on for talks with Tusk and, of course, the European Commission president.
It will be a day when there may be a bit of, you know, polite talk. There may be sort of, you know, a cup of tea and welcoming her to Brussels, and also a reiteration that they really, for anything more to happen, for there to be any change needs to come from the United Kingdom. The European Union has said, look, we spent 24 months negotiating that exit deal. We are not going to reopen that. But if you've got other plans, other ideas that you think that you can sell to your parliament that will find us some sort of maneuver out of this, you know, this absolute dead end that all sides are in, then they said, we're prepared to listen. But the whole point is that it looks as though that there is little hope of getting any of that movement because the parliament in the United Kingdom is so paralyzed. There is no agreement in the UK parliament on how to move forward. So the EU is saying, well, look, if you can't come up with anything, we can't discuss anything, that's the end of it. And really, it's just going to be it. No one wants a return to the borders. Everybody has seen the benefits of having the single market, that free movement of goods, trade, services, labor. Everyone's seen the benefits of that, so they don't want to go back to that. But in the meantime, you know, unless the United Kingdom puts something on the table come the 29th of March, then they will be leaving the European Union.
All right, that's Paris-based British journalist Catherine Field. A new report by the United Nations claims North Korea is working to ensure its nuclear and ballistic missile capabilities cannot be destroyed by military strikes. VOA's Steve Miller has more from Seoul.
The announcement by UN monitors comes ahead of a meeting between U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea Stephen Biegun and his North Korean counterpart in preparation for a second denuclearization summit. The UN report found evidence of North Korea using civilian facilities, including airports, for ballistic missile assembly and testing with the goal of effectively preventing decapitation strikes. U.S. President Donald Trump has hailed tremendous progress in his dealings with North Korea and set the date for his second summit with Kim Jong-un for February 27th and 28th in Vietnam. Steve Miller, VOA News, Seoul.
Pope Francis has admitted that Catholic priests have abused nuns, in some cases keeping them as sex slaves. Speaking to reporters Tuesday after a historic visit to the United Arab Emirates, the Pope said the church has worked to address the problem but said it was still going on. The Pope said more needs to be done to protect women everywhere. VOA's Slatika Hoke reports.
The Pope was asked about sexual abuse of nuns on his return flight from Abu Dhabi. He acknowledged that it has happened.
It's not something that everyone does, but there have been priests and even bishops who have done this. And I think it is still taking place because it is not as though the moment you become aware of something, it goes away.
The Vatican's women's magazine, Women Church World, reported a few days ago that in some cases, nuns were forced to have abortions, which is against the Church's teachings. Last November, the Catholic Church's Global Organization for Nuns denounced the culture of silence and secrecy that prevented them from speaking out. The global Me Too movement was credited with encouraging nuns to speak out. The Pope admitted that some nuns have been used as sex slaves by the clergy. He commended his predecessor, Pope Benedict, for his effort to prevent the abuse.
We have suspended a few clerics and sent some away over this. And also, I don't know whether the process is over, but we have also dissolved a few female religious orders in connection with this, which is corruption, no?
Pope Francis said the mistreatment of women is a worldwide problem in some regions more than in others.
I dare say that humanity has not yet matured. Women are second-class citizens, and it starts from there, no? It is a cultural problem.
The pontiff praised a small girl who broke through security in Abu Dhabi to hand deliver a letter to him.
That girl has a future. Dare I say, her poor husband, eh? She was courageous. I liked it. It took courage to do that.
Pope Francis made a historic visit to the United Arab Emirates to promote peace in the Middle East. He said there is no religious justification for raising a hand in violence against a fellow human being. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA.
On Our Voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about,
sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices
with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
VOA's International Edition continues. The town of Paradise, California, was ravaged by a fire in November that killed more than 80 people and drove thousands from their homes. Now music is helping survivors with their recovery, as we hear from VOA's Mike O'Sullivan.
A heartfelt performance by students from fire-ravaged communities, still in ashes.
On November 8th, the fires burned our hometown of Paradise and scattered 50,000 people from that ridge all over California and Oregon and Washington. And one of the administrators came up to me and asked, what if we got a choir together to start the healing process?
The choir, drawn from five local high schools in the devastated region, includes many students like this one who lost her family home.
Like, it's just kind of awesome that I get to be part of this thing that everybody is contributing to. Everyone's, like, pulling together after the fire and helping each other out, and it's just really cool. And this event, I've never done anything this big before.
The performance took place at the NAM, or National Association of Music Merchants, trade show, which showcases the tools of music making. Organizers brought 117 young performers to Southern California, including an exchange student displaced by the fire with her host family.
It is a way of reconstructing not only the community, but ourselves after what happened. It's very, very healing.
The concert is a statement by young people in a community hit by tragedy.
It's important because it's a way to unite people. It's a way to connect about something that's traumatic, something that has destroyed everything.
Many in the community are ready to rebuild, but one student who lost her home says it's still difficult dealing with the loss.
It's still a really touchy subject, but I think people are, you know, starting to not get over it, but, you know, the pain's going away a little bit.
These students say music helps them heal, and it's a gift they are sharing with others. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Anaheim, California.
Absolutely inspiring.
And on this day in music, on February 7th, 1969, Welsh entertainer Tom Jones launched his highly successful television variety show, This is Tom Jones. He reportedly earned $9 million from the show over 3 years and was nominated for a Golden Globe Award for Best Actor that first year. His career has spanned six decades. Tom Jones is now 78 and still doing concerts as of last year. And you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Calvin Fowler. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
This is VOA News.